Hello, everyone. Welcome to the California Tailgate Podcast. After a year-long hiatus, we're finally back, probably for more episodes. But tonight, we bring you. I am Dangles, as always. And, of course, with me, we have... Who else with me?
Nero. Don't drive a P71 anymore because I crashed it.
Tez. My name's Tez. Yes.
No, I'm Tez.
Yep.
And I'm Travis.
Here. Hi.
And we've got quite a lot to talk about tonight since it's been a year, and it's been quite a crazy year for kind of all of us. And like Nero said, Nero's no longer driving the P71 Crown Vic. What exactly happened with that?
Well, the TLDR of it is that I passed out while I was driving, and I crashed into a ditch, and it's totaled. And this was back in June 16th, so about 4.5 months ago at this point. I'm all right. I got a Lincoln Town Car, which, for those who don't know, is on the same platform, but it's like a more luxury version. And it can be made to, you know, handle the same way, and I'm just continuing my idea for my build where I'd originally left off.
Yeah, it's really a shame that what happened to that. It's like, and actually, all of us pretty much saw the dash cam video of it. It was actually kind of spooky for some of us to watch.
Yeah, it wasn't very scary at all. I mean, I didn't see it happen.
Yeah, you're taking a little nap.
If anything, I feel bad for Travis because Travis was driving right behind me when it happened, and what were your thoughts when this was happening?
Nero crashed. I said, oh, that sucks. And then Borg and I went to go get donuts.
A happy ending, for sure.
I was expecting you to tell them the thing that you told me, which is, oh, yeah, I was driving behind you, and, you know, I was like, oh, shit, looks like he's going way too fast into that corner. Is he going to slow down?
Oh, I can go through that spiel if you want. Anyway, I was driving behind Nero. He answers... the corner way too fast. I think to myself, that's faster than I've ever seen any man take that corner, and faster than I'm going to take that corner. And then I watched him do a fucking general lee off into a ditch.
Yeah, so, I was going at least 65 at the start.
I would say quite a bit faster, because you could take that corner about that speed.
Yeah, but like, I didn't turn, so.
Yeah, but you're also going way faster than that.
Yeah, I don't know how fast it was because my dash cam's GPS was disabled at the time, but yeah. I mean, it's a good thing these fucking cars are safe. They weigh a lot, and that probably saved my life in this situation.
On your roof.
It's great to you're at least able to, you know, keep walking after the crash, but you know, well, I was watching the video. We actually could hear you start snoring in the video.
Yeah, I was just, you know, taking a nap.
Right before a corner, just got to gather your energy. You just pull right out of it.
I mean, he was saving his energy for the big race later on. He just had to take a nap in that corner.
Yeah. And basically I just hadn't gotten enough sleep that week, and I hadn't really eaten or drank anything that day, besides like a little bit of like tea or whatever it was that Travis gave me. Travis roofied me. Right, Travis?
Man, I got to your car and that fucking, it wasn't tea, it was Arizona, like, pop. It was like some fizzy Arizona drink, which is delicious.
Let me tell you something. I had two that of shit them, got everywhere.
I gave him one, and then I fucking hop on the roof of Nero's car after he crashes. Fucking looking through his window, I'm like, oh, fuck, it's everywhere. What the fuck?
He's like, no, not the drink.
So I'm watching where I put my hands while Nero's fucking, you know, passed out. I'm like, oh.
You want a sticky drink on you, I got
that it. That shit went everywhere, Travis. There was literally a drop of it that was on the back of my fucking head unit.
I'm not surprised.
That was the real reason you had to get rid of the Crown Vic. It was just too sticky inside.
Oh, yeah, you're going there.
Stickier than normal.
I tried to sell Tez the car for about, you know, $9,000, and he wouldn't take it.
Okay, yeah, so here's
it's too good of a deal.
I'll put a bit more rundown on what actually happened in the crash, because, you know, Nero wasn't awake because he was sleeping on the job. But Nero crashes.
It's terrible.
In the video, I say something like, I think I just sigh or some shit like that.
You said something like, I think you sighed and said, I don't know what you said.
I sighed. I pulled over.
Borg was behind me.
If you'll let me tell the story. I sighed, pulled over. Borg pulled up next to me. I said, Nero crashed. We ran over there. Fucking, there's Nero crashed. We go down the little bank into the little fucking valley thing. I hop on top of his car, look through his window. Yeah, he's passed out. Borg smashes out the passenger side window, open up that door. At some point, Borg called an ambulance. Police showed up, ambulance showed up. We didn't know Nero. They interviewed us a little bit, and we drove off. That's pretty much it.
What flavor of donuts did you get?
I think I just got, like, a chocolate-filled, like... That's usually my go-to, is, like, a cream-filled chocolate or something like that.
So so while Nero's in a hospital, you're just enjoying a nice glazed donut with filling?
I was just waiting for Nero to fucking call
me. I ended up being... Yeah, I ended up being home like 3 hours after it happened.
I just remember getting Nero gets in my fucking car, he's all mad and shit. I'm like, don't take it out on me.
I wasn't mad at you.
No, bro, you're fucking... You weren't mad at me, you're just fucking angry because you don't remember shit, and it was weird.
Yeah, I still don't remember shit.
Literally woke up in a hospital.
Yeah.
It's not exactly probably a good feeling.
Although, reviewing the videos, I did, for some reason... I didn't register in my head what it was at this time, but I did remember a short part of the conversation that I had with the cop. But it was like very... If you've ever had like a concussion, you kind of know what I'm talking about.
This dude, I'm fucking...
What's your first name? Jack? What's your last name?
This dude said Jack? In this state, he was like, do you realize you... I think it was me that said it. I'm like, you realize you crashed your car? And this dude straight up says, I don't crash. I was just saying, passed out in the fucking driver's seat.
He was also, hilariously answered questions. It was in the video. In the video, you were answering questions from, like, I think it was the cop. And you said, like, oh, you said something like, he asked you your name, you said Jack. And then,
that's not the cop.
That was the paramedic, yeah.
Someone asked you if, like, you
the
don't.
Paramedic.
You, okay, well, regardless, the video was very interesting.
Okay, I think that's...
I don't have anything to add because I don't remember the video perfectly.
With the town car though, the Lincoln town car, it's a dark red one. It's a 2009 also. I've lowered it, you know, with some coilovers, and I put all those parts that were on the Vic on it because none of them were actually really messed up by this. And at this point, it's pretty much better than the Vic was, except I'm on federal SS-595s right now, which are dog shit.
Hey, speaking with your town car being the Vic right now, were there any like advantages to the town car stock compared to the Vic you had?
Oh, absolutely not. The stock 0-60 of the P71 is 7.8 seconds. The stock 0-60 of this thing is 9.2 seconds, and wow. It forces you to upshift at like 4,500 RPM. Which is not even close to redline, and the shifts are really soft, so they take forever. And they had rear air suspension, and the thing is, I got a tune as well as the P71 intake. So doing that, not only did it firm up the shifts, make them a lot faster, make it actually shift at redline, but it brought the 0-60 from 9.2 to 7.6. So it's actually faster than the P71 was now in a straight line.
Oh, nice.
The only problem is that the P71 drive shaft isn't compatible with the town car. The town car is a steel drive shaft. The problem with the steel drive shafts is that they're not safe to 130 miles an hour like the P71's aluminum one is. Mm-hmm. So the car was limited to 110. And then me and Travis found out that the tune removed the limiter.
We're heading down ACH for... one of the roads off ACH.
That was upper, Nero, I think.
Okay, upper.
Big Angeles Forest Highway. Angeles Forest.
Whatever, we're fucking going down straight away. Nero says, coming up on the limiter, so I looked down at the speedo. The limiter should be 110. We're going about 120. And he keeps climbing with a drive shaft not rated for it.
So then Travis is like, Nero, that says 120. I'm like, oh, shit.
You paid for the entire speedometer.
I did.
Well, in that case, is there any way to reinforce a drive shaft for that kind of limitation?
Just replace or it.
There's no way to do that. The problem is that the town car, its drive shaft is 3 inches longer than the P71. And that means that I can't just bolt it right up. I would either have to get like a custom drive shaft or a spacer. Some P71s had a special, like they called a metal matrix drive shaft that was good up to 160. If I could get one of those in a spacer, it would be ideal.
Oh. I mean, as long as the car is working on fine and it looks like your new town car is actually working out better for you than the Crown Vic is, well, comparatively now. Not saying that the crash was a happy thing, but at least somewhere down the line, something improved, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a nicer car, that's for sure.
Can we just talk about how hard it is to do a podcast without making eye contact?
It's not.
I'm having problems.
That's because, Travis, you don't have a fucking webcam, so no one can make eye contact.
It would help you a lot more if you had a webcam, bro.
Bro, how is webcams going to help?
Yeah.
Off topic, come on.
Tell me how a webcam's going to help. You can't, like, look each other in the eyes with a damn webcam.
I'm doing that right now.
Man. But anyway, that brings up a good topic about how COVID-19 and the world pandemic and all that is affecting the car community itself, and how, well, local car meetups and how that's changed, and well, this pretty much affected everyone. But for us personally, we still meet. I mean, cars are just giant moving bubbles anyway, right?
Effectively.
Yeah, but we just haven't been doing that as much as we did prior, for sure.
I mean, if you go up to the canyons at night, you'll see people up there still. I wouldn't really say there's been a decrease in the number of people driving in the canyons at night, like people who are racing. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about any other kind of car meet, or let's say auto shows or SEMA, for example, they're all canceled. They're not happening.
Yep. They're dead.
Yeah. And yes, the thing, that kind of difference between the car communities and the professional side, is so to say, where the shows and conventions and cars and coffee, something that's more legal and official, while the underside, underbelly, where, you know, if you go to any toge at night right now, I'm pretty sure you'll see someone driving downhill or racing or doing whatever, especially.
Yeah, I mean, GMR reopened.
Yeah, GMR is open. ILWAD also opened recently, too, right? Or.
What? What?
Idlewild?
Idlewild, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Idlewild's been open for a while now. I think it's as of April or sooner than that.
Yeah, like after the lockdowns and stuff. So
yeah,
a lot of these roads finished up the work up there. Yeah, and a lot of these roads, especially in my home course, Little Tahunga, has also been open. And in fact, it's been so open during the COVID, is there's now actually a corner on Little Tahunga where there's cars just piling up offside the cliff. I'm not joking about this. There is, I don't know what the corner is. It's like after that one major hairpin.
The switchbacks.
There used to be a railing there. I don't remember last time I went there. I don't remember seeing that railing anymore. But there used to be a railing there.
Can someone drop a pin for that on maps?
Of all, the recent crashes were going the other way than where it usually happens, because usually it's a decreasing radius turn and it catches people off guard, and the guardrail's not long enough, so they just go straight off.
Yeah.
But apparently what happened here was an FRS spun out in front of the group, causing a Mercedes to fly off the road. And then about, I think, 4 or 5 cars down the line made... No. Okay, I'm thinking about 2 different accidents. So, I'm thinking about... There's a fucking dart that... Or something that flipped recently, too. I'm thinking about that. What happened was a Camaro behind, like four cars down, smacked into a guardrail because apparently they were stopped around the corner, and then the guy right behind him flew off the side of the mountain.
So basically what happened is that the Mercedes crashed because of the FRS spinning out. Then everyone stopped. Then the Camaro slammed into the back of those guys.
Well, he smacked into a guardrail.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently they're guys from Malibu. So, you know, repping the Malibu strong, you know.
Yeah, like guys from Malibu, like, you know, me.
Guys from Malibu love crashing. Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one crash, though.
It's two crashes.
I mean, over the summer, I actually went there 1 week and the week right after, and both times there were actually crashes at two different locations. In fact, one of them is actually the base of Little Tahunga, where like all those homes are, and like those ranches or houses are, whatever. Like yeah. There was actually a straight part, and somehow I think a Mustang flipped over on a straight part of Little Tahunga. I don't know how that happened. And yeah. I remember this because there was a pickup truck trying like backing into it, trying to push it out of the way of the road to clear the road. So, and a week after that, in that same switchbacks where the cars were piling up, again, I saw another car down there because I saw a black 370Z kind of just like on the side of it because I'm assuming they were driving together, along with a tow truck or at least I think a couple of like Forest Street guys, basically all just looking down over the side of the cliff from what I could see. So obviously, and the problem is with that corner, you can't really actually pull cars out of it either. It's just way too deep. It's into that ditch and there's no real point in pulling cars. So you can actually go there and see like a pile of few cars there.
Yeah. And then I was also getting this mixed up with the other crash. There's a Dart that flipped recently, smacked into the side of a mountain, flipped over on its top. I've seen a Civic stuck in a ditch. Like, he just drove it. He backed up into it. He just fucking got stuck somehow. I don't know. There's been a lot of crashes at TU lately.
On that one specific corner, though, I mean, even...
Which corner is this, though? I don't remember.
Well, that's because you don't know. But there's been multiple occasions where multiple cars have crashed in the same night on that corner. For example, one time, me and Travis, after we did our weekly D&D session... we decided to go up to Little Tahunga, and there was like, you should have seen it. There were four helicopters circling the valley with spotlights.
They were fucking in the valley. It was wild.
Like just, they were doing like a rescue operation because a car had flipped into the ditch and another car had flipped into the ditch right on top of it.
I don't know. Do you think that, I don't think they were both the same night. I think it's just two different cars. Oh,
I don't know. But you know,
I'm not really quite sure.
There was a car on top of a car.
Anyway, T's where it's happening lately because GMR was shut down for so long and a lot of people
forgot about GMR.
They didn't want to stop crashing at GMR and decide to crash somewhere else, basically.
Yes, that's good. Let's leave it that way.
No, because Little T was the place I drove, not GMR. Now everyone's crashing on my place.
The worst part is
they're crashing during midday, too, not just at night. So they're crashing at all times of the day.
Ted just wants to keep the weekly GMR crashes to himself.
Yeah, I want to have all the crashes myself.
The scuffs on the side of the mountain wall are named with Tez.
See, Tez has a technique.
Oh, shit. Derek's back.
Yeah. So there's a certain strategy that James has, Tez, where... he'll just crash into the wall on the same corner every time on GMR.
He's done it about three times now.
Three times. I haven't done it again.
Yeah.
So that's the Han strategy. You're building up immunity to that corner, like how you
post
as a poison. Yeah. Build up your poison immunity. He's doing that with a corner right now.
Yeah, I take a cyanide capsule a day, bro.
Yeah, remember when Dogami did the epic guardrail tap and Ikatani passed out because it was epic? That's what James does.
Yes, but I'm the one that passes out.
No, I am.
Oh, yeah, it was just delayed pass out.
Yeah, and so basically James is fast now, I guess.
I don't know. It's hard. I'm trying to like maintain perspective on it and not let it go to my head, so I truly don't know if I'm... I appreciate it, though. I just... Hard to imagine being fast when you're just, like, following somebody, and you're just speaking like, I'm just here to cruise.
Speaking of fast, Travis, you got a brand new fucking Mazda, right?
Brand new.
Well, brand new to you. Well, not brand really.
Thinking new.
2008 Mazda 5, grand touring model, 6 CD changer, auxiliary cable that does not work, automatic transmission, Driptonic, 2.3 Mazda motor.
How fast is it?
It's got minivan doors because it's a minivan.
It is a minivan. 0 to 60 is probably about, the rough estimates, 3.6 seconds.
Nice. Faster than Miata.
3.6
faster than seconds. Everything.
The 3.6 seconds is only if he goes off a, you know, a cliff.
3.6 seconds in a minivan, bro.
Faster than a BRZ. My 0 to 20 time.
Fun fact, the Mazda 5 is the only documented minivan that is actually slower than a BRZ.
All you have to do is wait for me to ground the fucking...
I'm gonna fucking challenge you to a toge battle, bro.
For those who don't know, since I've already... Like, we started this, but only I said what car I drive. Both Derek, or Dangles, and Travis, or Travador, or, you know, they drive NB Miatas. Total toge normies, absolute the most normal car you'll see on the toge. Except for the BRZ, which James or Tez drives.
Yeah,
and then the Chad Lincoln is also on the toge.
No? What Lincoln?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the Mazda 5 is pretty epic. Travis took me out in it, and he needs to get wheels and tires on this thing. It's got like 205 all seasons. But, you know, he was punking some Hondas. And then after he keeps up with them on the toge, he pops the sliding minivan doors open. And then on the way back down the hill towards the freeway, I'm looking in the rearview mirror on the passenger side, and I keep seeing these orange lights, like a turn signal coming on in the rearview, but I don't actually take a good look at it. But I actually got a good look at it. His rear right brakes were just throwing sparks every time he hit the brakes.
What?
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at that again since you brought that up. I just chose to ignore it.
Well, it has pad on it. It has plenty of pad, but so I don't know why it's doing that.
I think it just likes doing it.
That's pretty epic, to be honest.
That's just his riser mod for his Mazda 5.
Yeah, that's like putting the little spark pads in the back of your skateboard.
I think I'm going to drag a chain behind the Mazda 5.
Which of super riser mods, how's that turbo whistle working for your town car, Nero?
Oh,
I forgot about that thing.
Is that even there?
Wait, what?
I'm not sure if it's still...
What?
So Derek had a turbo whistle from when he first got his Miata, I guess. And we put it on the town car for the...
in a tailpipe.
Yeah, so we put it on my car for the meme. And not even when we put it on there did I actually hear it make any noise. And it's either fallen off or it's still on there, but either way, I've not heard anything from it.
Also, just a real quick plug, if anyone needs their rear window done for their hardtop on Miata, please hit me up on Instagram. I can get you a quote done pretty cheap.
Yeah, we're experts at installing them. Look, we can install a Miata hardtop window at a professional level.
Yes.
I mean, if you compare it to the work of a professional, ours is better.
Really better than a professional shop.
So recently, I had to replace my back window for my hardtop because the previous window was basically a thin, plasticky, flimsy thing just cut to just be there. You can actually touch it and like bend the window. It's that thin.
It was yellowed.
Yeah, it was yellow, turning to shit. It was all scratched up. I could actually not see out of it whatsoever. Actually, the only time I could see out of it when it was raining. Like if water filled in all the scratch cracks and stuff, I could see through that back window. But otherwise, this is though Southern California. It never fucking rains here, so I could never see out of it. So I decided to order a Lexan, like, plastic... I guess it's like super acrylic, or is the best way to describe it. It's really thick plastic, basically. You can bend it, you can cut it, you can sand it down. The most important part, you can see right through it. And I bought it already cut out and made for an OEM style hardtop, which is what I have. And I decided, you know, after I got it, take it to a professional window installer place. Now, what happened was they quoted me $150 to install this. And the guy told me, oh, yeah, I work with this material before. I can totally handle it. Then he calls me up an hour later. It's like, no, how do you want me to install it? And no, I just told him, though, I saw it your way. You know, I defer to the professional, so to say. And I assume this man here was a professional of his caliber to professionally install this professionally made window for my...
Note how often he says professionally.
Yes, and yeah. Then, no, I get like a call a couple hours later saying he seems really remorseful, saying I'm sorry, but no, this is a very hard thing, and whatever. Short story is, I went there, pick it up. It looked fine at first, but that was only because it still had the tape on it. No,
you put pictures up in the YouTube video.
And I need to put pictures on this, but yeah, it had like the masking tape and all that, so it didn't rattle on the way home. So I thought it was fine. Didn't actually took off the tape, drove around with it. But the whole entire top part of the back window completely separated from the hard top. So it was rattling as I was driving, and it was like, it became like a foil, airfoil, just scooping in air into my cabin, no, my front seats.
Roof scoop.
Free airflow, bro. Scoop.
Yeah, roof scoop. So I had Travis and Nero, we all got together. We tore off the old installation job, and it was covered in tarry, sticky-ass black crap.
So much fucking RTV, it wasn't even funny. Jesus Christ, you should have seen it.
It got everywhere. It was like the stickiest crap ever. I think I still got specks of it on top of my hard top I haven't got rid of. But yeah, it took us about, I don't know, 6-7 hours to like remove it, sand it, and clean off the black stuff, drill in holes into my hard. We had to drill in holes into the back window and into the hard top. Which, this window came with an installation kit. Basically, gaskets, rubber molding for that weather molding on the outside, and it actually came lined up with, like, drill holes, too. The professional installation touched none of that. They did zero with the installation kit whatsoever, because they just thought they could just glue it onto my window, back my hardtop, and call it done. No, you actually had to use the installation kit, drill in the holes, and drill into the hard top, and install it that way. And that's kind of what we had to do. Unfortunately, they kind of did drill it, but they only drilled like 5 or 6 holes lining the bottom of the back window. And they didn't even use the guided drill holes. Not only that, they didn't even drill pilot holes into the window. So parts of the back window did crack when they drilled it in.
We don't even need to use a pilot hole. They literally, I don't know how the fuck they did it, but there are like splintering cracks around where they installed these like very few number of screws that they had actually used.
Yeah.
All we did was literally just drill a hole and put a screw in it. I don't know how they fucked it up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure all they did was take it, the screw, and just held it against the window and just forced it in there somehow and hoping it'll go through. That's the only way I could have thought that they did it, because it was just so poorly done and way they screwed it in. And I can't believe like people who owns a shop and calling them professionals did such a shit job in installing this window.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. But you never know who's going to be a real professional and who's not.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's important to, like, I don't know. I try to research all the glass shops, but I guess most of the glass shops and stuff around my area only do with standard, windshields and stuff. That's basically every Corolla, Honda, Civic, whatever, not something specialized for what I need them for. And in the end, to get the window installed, we didn't use any adhesives whatsoever. We completely drilled holes and bolted it onto the hardtop like we were supposed to. And it looks, I guess, GDM as fuck.
We used the gaskets that were provided. And, frankly, if you You can see a lot of like the screws now where it's installed, but frankly, if you got like a thick weather strip and you just put it around the edge of the window, it would look like factory, in my opinion. But the point is, you didn't even need the RTV. The guy just completely ignored the goddamn installation kit.
Yeah, they didn't even look at it, touch it, because it was a perfect mix. If you look at it, like, it made sense to how to install it after you look at the installation kit. I just didn't know. In the end, I guess I should have just done it myself, but I thought, I never installed the glass before, so I thought, let's a professional do it. But, man, that was a fucking shit show from them.
Wasn't there, like, any options for, like, any Miata-specific guys out there? Or are they all like... Because I know there's some, like, there's a lot of Miata stuff down here. I don't know, what Miata shots could have been near you.
I mean, I didn't really look for any specific, like, Miata shops, because I don't know if they do, like, body work and glass, or just, like, mechanically with Miatas and stuff like that.
Yeah, because, I guess.
And like I said, I actually did call around and ask shops and show them pictures, like, what I have. Most shops did turn me down. I did, like, call up about a dozen shops or so, like, around my area. And all of them turned me down except this one place. And and they seemed pretty confident that they could do this. And I guess, in the end, I got a shit job out of it.
Have you tried talking to them about your money or not?
Well, I mean, instead of 150, I gave them 100, but honestly, I don't really give much of a shit to go back and demand my money back, since it was, like, all cash and stuff.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
At least you didn't pay the full price.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a lesson learned on that one. Turns out you could do it yourself.
Yeah, turns out I could just do it myself.
Yeah, so that's kind of how everything is.
Yeah.
Puts on Infinity Gauntlet. Better do this myself.
I'm already fucked up because, I didn't feel half as bad when I hit the angle grinder.
Yeah, we did sand it down with an ankle grinder, not with a sander, because we didn't have enough time.
We didn't have a sander.
Yeah, we didn't have a sander. We had some sandpaper. That's about it.
We had a sanding block and some sandpaper.
I'm assuming the sanding took the most amount of time.
Kind
of. Yeah, it took a fair bit of time.
Yeah, it took us a bit of time to realize that it wasn't doing shit and we needed to attack with the angle grinder.
Yeah, but we also had to sand it inside the hardtop as well to get rid of a lot of the adhesives.
Oh, that's true. That's what we got it in the first place for.
Yeah, that was the main reason we got it, actually.
Yeah, that was something. So, we have... there's been a lot of new cars that have been announced or, showcased since the previous episode. So, which of those would we like to talk about first?
Well, how about we tackle the big one from Nissan, the 400Z here. So, in the past month or so, or 2 months or so, Nissan finally announced that they're releasing the 400Z, that it is a V6. So, continuing the tradition of all Z cars, and we have a look of it right here. And I don't know, first impressions of the look. I know Tez had some damning thing and about damning opinions about it.
Maybe not damning, but I definitely had some complaints, specifically with them trying to do like a retro styling, but kind of half-assing it. Because honestly, the taillights, oh my gosh. They did a really good job at the rear of the car. The whole rear of the car, good retro-looking design, very good throwback. I like it. It honestly looks like a modern, like, Z car, like, in my opinion, but with a retro throwback. But the front, they made two mistakes. One, they tried to mimic the original 240/280Z front bumper, where it's got that large grille in the front. Mm-hmm. But they failed that by making the grille not nearly as large as it was in the previous on those generations that it's throwing back to. So it seems kind of out of place. Like, we've seen all the test photos and all the rendered photos, and then when they threw it on the stage, we for like a good like 5 minutes of the video, I didn't know that was an actual production car. I was thinking this was like a prototype, because that front bumper just looked kind of off, and it's just it feels like there's nothing there. It's kind of weird because, like, if you look at the 240Z, like, beautiful front end, the grille's nice and wide. You take off that silly like American bumper thing that they have on it, that we in the US only have due to safety standards. Like, it's beautiful. It's a nice wide large grille, very muscly, you know, a very good like design in my opinion. But here the grille is like, I'd say about two-thirds of the size, and it sits right between the headlights, and I don't know, there's just a lot of space in the right and left side. It just doesn't look like much of a throwback. And then the headlights, they're arguing that it's a throwback to that original circular design, and I can kind of see that with the like the daytime running lights they have on it, but like,
yeah,
it just doesn't meld well. Like, I don't know what they were thinking with the front end. Like, they're trying to keep it modern, trying to go for a throwback, but honestly, it's either you go one way or the other. It's either you go straight retro throwback with some modern, you know, underpinnings to it, or you make it new. And I feel like they were stuck in the middle on the front end. And honestly, if you look at all, another complaint I have about the car is that once you break down all the body lines and compare it to the previous model, it's shaping up, because we haven't gotten a confirmation on if the chassis is new, but it's shaping up to be pretty similar in the platform. Like, the cool thing is that it's a V6 twin turbo now, which that's awesome. Like, that's cool. It's going to make a lot more power. But yeah. I'm not exactly liking the idea of, oh, it's a 350Z that's been tuned up a little with a slightly new chassis design. I don't know. We'll have to wait till it gets released. But for me, I don't know.
According to, let's see here, Car and Driver, they have a list of actually different trims for it, you know, going from base to the Nismo version, possibly. And if they do release a Nismo version, I'm pretty sure it will be a lot more souped up than a 350Z comparatively. Because what they're estimating at the base model, around 300 horsepower, with the Nismo version possibly getting up to 400, but we don't really know that because, again, it hasn't been released yet.
Yeah. But from everything I've heard, too, it's like it's using the V6 that's from their like their Infiniti line too. So yeah,
the Infiniti Q60, I believe. So
yeah, it's shaping up to be like a very competitive vehicle, and I think even with my minor complaints, it's going to be better than the Supra.
And that's the thing. I mean, how would it compare to the Supra or the Z4 or anything? Like, I'm assuming those would be the main competitors for this.
Well, the first factor. Well, yeah, they are the same car, but
yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but the thing is, the big thing will be that it's manual. We're going to have manual on it still. That's true. As much as that may seem minor to a lot of people, especially if new sports cars being all about being, you know, auto with like 10 speed or 8 speed transmissions for fast shifting, I still would prefer a manual. It just would be nicer, and it's definitely a cool option on the 400Z. Like the fact that they've made a point to show that we're still doing it, everybody, is a pretty big point to make the Supra Toyota look kind of stupid for not making the Supra a manual and maybe having an auto with it.
Well, just to also add in that Mazda also seems to be, you know, love to add in manuals to their modern cars as well.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like I think there's an understanding that manual is to have fun. And maybe, yeah, it's not the absolute fastest anymore to shift with. It's still not terrible, and you're still having a good time with it.
Well, I think you know what we find out from this, right? Let's put the facts on the table. The Mazda 5 has won more races than the 400Z.
This is true.
This is true.
I mean, yes. You can't argue with it. Okay, jokes aside, I think this thing is going to be the king of body kits. If you see one of these, it's hard to have a body kit on it.
You're not wrong. That's how the 350 and 370Zs have already been, to be honest.
It kind of looks like they just took a 350Z and put some stupid headlights on the front, and they just cut part of the front bumper out. Like, it doesn't...
Honestly, yeah.
It's nothing special. It really isn't anything special. Well, the only thing I would say is good about it, it's a good car. The only thing I would say is, you know, great though in terms of like modern sports car would be the 6-speed manual transmission, because if you want a modern GT car, I mean, at this price point, I mean, you can still get the Mustang GT or the Camaro SS But this is a lot cheaper than the Supra, if I recall correctly.
Let me really this.
And it's not a good one.
Is it really a Grand Tour if it's a manual?
Yes.
Because the Mazda 5 is the Grand Touring.
That Mazda 5 shitpost begins.
The estimated price for this thing is, let's see, 44 grand.
Quick. The only manual Mazda 5 you can get didn't come in the Grand Touring.
There are plenty of Grand Touring cars that are manual, like the Ferrari 612, which has a 5.7 liter V12 and 6.2 manual.
Oh, wait, plus Mazda 5 changed everything. It showed that the standard needs to be automatic for a Grand Touring vehicle.
I think the whole concept of a Grand Touring car is about like its comfort and power in a package that can like be enjoyable for a long distance trip. So that's what I see a Grand Touring car as. I think that's might be close to the definition of it. I don't see the 400Z as a Grand Touring car. It's a sports car.
Wait.
The Grand Touring
is literally a two-door with two rear seats.
And the 400Z does not have rear seats, bro.
It doesn't?
No.
I mean, the ND Miata has a GT model, Grand Touring model, RF, so... Yeah. I think the only thing that really defines it as Grand Touring or GT is how luxurious it is on the inside.
Crown Vic GT, baby.
I guess my I have a personal definition of Grand Tour that kind of diverges from it, because I feel like the Grand Tour is like, I don't know, it's hard to say. I just don't think it's a Z.
Well, think of it this way: Grand Touring, like I'm going to use the ND as an example, is slightly more luxurious than the sport or club model, in that in sense you're Grand Touring as in I think of it as a road trip car. Something you can take a road trip, put down the top, have the wind flow through your hair, have some nice infotainment on the inside or whatever you need. It's basically a way to sell it to boomers who want to road trip in a nice car or something.
I can see that.
That's the only way to me, that's how I define GT.
I think the definition of it's kind of wide, so it's, I don't know, it's hard for me to say, but... The more I think about it, I think the bigger focus of a Grand Tour is just its luxury factor. I think that's what really sets a Grand Tour apart from like a sports car, because like that's why they offer the GT model, which is the point you made. So if it's got like leather seats and leather shit everywhere, I guess it's a Grand Tour.
So another new car, the Tesla Model Y. Who gives a shit? Okay.
Out the window.
Anything else to say about the 400Z?
I got nothing about the 400Z. It's going to be probably a good car, but a little disappointed on its aesthetics because it doesn't seem like they know where they're going with it.
Well, let's talk about something similar then, moving on to the new BRZ.
Ooh.
We have our resident Toboru fag to talk all about it.
Yes. There's been like some new photos that came from SubiFest that have more or less confirmed the design. From this article on Car and Driver is based off of what... I think this is based off of what we saw from SubiFest. I can pull up the photos for that as well. Let me get that before we go into it.
You know how it would make the BRZ better?
What?
If it was front-wheel drive and it had minivan doors.
Oh yeah. I'll you know what? I'm honestly close friends with Senior Subaru himself. I'm gonna let him know, and he's gonna change the entire car right now.
Just another side note. I don't know much about this car, but the next generation Mazda 6 is supposed to be an inline 6 rear wheel drive.
Yeah, it would be great,
dude. That's gonna be insane.
Uh-oh, BRZ killer.
That's gonna be such a good car. It's not even funny.
About half the things on the market is a BRZ killer.
You're literally not wrong.
That's not true. About 90% of the things on the market are a BRZ killer.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
So those are some photos of just like what we've seen so far with the new BRZ. It seems like the exterior has gone on a slight refresh while still maintaining some of the initial like styling cues. Like I just looking at the window sills in comparison to like my current model BRZ, my previous model BRZ, It's pretty much the same. I'm assuming they're keeping the same chassis. But the key thing here is they're definitely going to be bringing in a new power plant with it, and pretty much confirmed as of like now. Like, not, it's still not definitive, but everything's been pointing towards it due to the rumor mill that it's going to be getting the 2.4 liter flat four. I think it comes from the Subaru Ascent. Apparently turbocharged, it's supposed to make 260 horsepower, and then naturally aspirated, it's supposed to make 217. So it'll be a horsepower bump, which it won't be much, but the key factor here is with this different motor, they might actually know how to tune the damn thing and not have a torque dip as deep as the Mariana's Trench.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think one of the things to note is that the I'm certain that at this point, having seen these pictures as well as the 400Z pictures, the third gen BRZ and the 420Z, or whatever they decide to call it, are going to be exactly the same.
Honestly, they already look the same.
They're starting
to get really similar. The problem with new sports cars is like they're all starting to look really samey. Like, the only car that doesn't look vastly different is the Supra. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's all modern sports cars. I think it's literally the 400Z and the second gen BRZ that look the same.
Okay, you're right. It's in for the GT86 or whatever that will come up to. The one key point to point out here is that there is apparently a split occurring, from what I've been reading around online, of a like a split between Toyota and Subaru on the intentions of the GT86 and the BRZ. Apparently, the game plan from Toyota is to rebrand it as the GR86. And with that rebranding, there's also talks about for sure turbocharging it. For Subaru, their model has always been to keep this vehicle naturally aspirated. And that is because, for one, it's a direct competitor to the WRX. If they throw in too much horsepower, at least
it's a direct competitor to the WRX if it's not all-wheel drive.
Exactly. That's what they say.
It's not about the all-wheel drive. See, the whole thing about Subaru is it's the horsepower figures. I mean, a car that literally weighs
a fucking Subaru for the horsepower figures.
I disagree, because like, listen, if you sat down
more than a Crown Vic, damn.
Listen,
if you a ton for fucking horsepowers, it sure as hell wouldn't be a fucking Subaru. It'd be a fucking Ford or some shit.
Like, I think it's hard. And said, hey, I want to buy this for the horsepower. I want to buy this for the torque dip.
No, it's because. So let me explain this, because Subaru has a structure that I've read about this on some articles. And they have a structure of how they want to sell Subaru products. Because when you join the Subaru family, they want to think of it as like a step up system. So if you hop in and get their more, you know, affordable models like an Impreza, a Crosstrek, and yes, a BRZ, they're expecting you to potentially upgrade later to their bigger and better models. And that's kind of how the tree works there. So the BRZ starts off kind of at the bottom in their sports car lineup. WRX comes in after, and then maybe the STI, you know, and that's legitimately how Subaru wants to do it, at least from what I've read. I could be wrong, but regardless, realistically, if you sat the same person down in a BRZ, let's say it was a turbocharged one making 260, like not to the wheel, but you know, obviously to the crank, so maybe about 230 wheel, versus a WRX. WRX is going to weigh like 3,200, I think I remember reading. I think it's 32 curb. I don't have to double check the WRX curb.
I mean, that sounds about right. 32 or 3.
It's about 33 to 35, actually.
So as much as a Camaro or a Mustang, but with less horsepower.
Yes.
But here's the thing. So like, yeah, with less horsepower. And here's the thing. If you sat someone down in a 2,800 pound BRZ, which that's what it is, 2,800 pounds, turbocharged, making 260 crank. That honestly will likely be more fun on the butt dyno. What's up?
I hear Travis complaining about something.
It's going to weigh more.
Travis, no one understands what you're saying. Okay, just Travis being ridiculous.
Look, let's put it this way. Maybe the new BRZ might actually be slightly faster than my blown engine 318 Ti was with an M3 engine.
All right, well, we'll think about that hypothetically. So, well, regardless, let's assume the new BRZ makes 142 horsepower.
What?
And
it won't though.
Makes, you know, more than it's making right now.
Well, regardless of it, my major complaint with the BRZ is not the power plant, because they are going to improve it. I think it comes down to what, like Nero was saying, the aesthetic. It looks very similar to a 400Z, and just not even that. It's like, I feel like a lot of the characters kind of gone from the BRZ.
Like, I feel like you're changing your story. You're just talking about how people are buying the BRZ for the horsepower. They're buying Subaru for the horsepower.
That has nothing to do with what
you said it literally earlier. People are buying Subarus.
No. I was just saying as an example.
Now they're buying it for style.
Idiot. I was literally just saying it for an example, bro.
We don't need to have a full-on fight on air like you have on Fox News.
Bro, I don't know what you're smoking, bro, but you better stop.
Tez shot me. He's vegan. Are you in the loot room, guys?
He's an imposter. I would say that the new BRZ might be good, and it also might not be good.
Yeah, there's no way of telling until it comes out. Yeah, more 12. But I don't know. I want to say, like, I really just do not like the new look. I really think the previous BRZs and FRS's GT86 had a lot more personality than this lump of plastic.
You know, if I was Toyota, I would say, fuck you, Subaru. I'm sick of your gay engine. What we're going to do is we're going to take the Camry V6 and we're going to put it in there, and we're going to call it the Celica. Oh,
yeah.
Dude, that would literally slap 99% of the cars in the market.
This is true. I can actually agree with that statement.
Like, yep. If they just put the TRD V6 in there, bro, and kept it manual and the same exact chassis, I think that car would actually be perfect.
Mm-hmm. But it won't happen ever.
It won't happen, no. Yeah. Toyota's a bunch of lazy people. I've got more descript words to describe them as, but I won't use them.
Time to do an engine swap, Tez.
No. Time to do a car swap, bro.
See, what James will do is he'll be like, oh, here's an LS400, or, you know, here's a Crown Victoria LX Sport with only 50,000 miles. But it costs $2,500. I was thinking more like, you know, $400. And he's like, bro, I just spent $2,000 on a fucking something that makes my BRZ slower.
Well, moving on from that, there's been recent news of Hummer being revived with its EV version of the Hummer. And this was actually pretty interesting, because it actually looks like, well, good, coming from Hummer, that is. Because I remember looking at the recent Hummers and just being awfully sickened and disappointed. But we know that the new Hummer, or at least what's being touted, is actually supposedly going to be a great off-road vehicle with a 1,000 push of torque or something.
Like, yeah, something crazy like that.
Yeah, something super crazy, like some 1,000 square foot torque and whatever. And it also had like what was the range on it too? They were touting.
I don't know.
150 miles, and it charges to 100 miles in 10 minutes.
If it does,
if that's true, that is amazing.
Yeah, you know, I would say I've seen some controversy over this, but it seems pretty straightforward to me. If there was one way for GM to make a big entrance into the EV market, it's by saying Hummer is EV now. Because, you know, the H1 was, you know, was based on a military vehicle. It was a good truck. But the H2 and the H3 and all that shit, horrible. And they developed a huge reputation for being some of the most inefficient junkers you can buy. So this is how GM kind of repays that and you know, improves.
So
it's going to make a big splash.
I have a bit of a different theory. Like, not theory, but a way GM could come back. And that's if they release, you know, they have to release an electric car now, like a good one. I think that they should bring back, they should buy the rights to the American Bantam pickup truck.
What?
The American Bantam pickup truck. This.
Looks like a piece of shit.
If they could sell this, an electric motor, you know, people would buy it. The Bantam in general. It doesn't have to be the pickup truck. It could be any of them.
Was that the Miata of trucks?
Not smaller. It's a Banta.
No, that thing runs.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, only Travis's Miata's break down.
Haven't
both of you had to replace? Both of you fuckers had to replace your engine.
Here's a picture of Tez inside the Bantam.
Wow. Looks like he lost weight.
I know, right?
So, you know, but yeah, both Derek and Travis's MB engines have exploded. So, and they're like, oh, mine is reliable. Yeah, sure.
Mine didn't explode because of the engine itself. Mine, because my coolant, like my hoses, actually exploded. Not the engine itself.
Japanese folded coolant hoses or something?
Look, I was able to drive mine home, but it didn't just explode. It didn't explode, really. It wasn't really the car's fault. It was cursed, first of all.
Yeah.
Something, a witch cursed it one day.
The curse of GMR?
It's the white car curse.
Okay, oh, yeah. If it's a white car curse, why am I having no problems with it now? All nares working perfectly.
It hasn't broken in 10 days.
It's the calm before the storm. It's the calm before the storm, bro.
Travis, how fun is it to sleep in your Miata?
I've slept in it maybe 5 or 6 times.
He slept in the trunk with his legs hanging out. It's hilarious.
It's pretty comfortable once you get in there.
It's definitely not.
You find the right spot, really. If you're sleeping in the trunk, you need to be really careful on not putting your legs in the trunk in fear of someone locking you inside the trunk.
Yeah, that's why he had to put his legs outside of the trunk. If he lost the legs, at the very least, he wouldn't be locked in there.
That's the reason. That's definitely not because I couldn't fit in there.
Oh, yeah. You could if we, crumpled you up a little bit more.
I think the storage area is actually smaller than me.
That's what you think. We could just close the trunk on you once we get, and you just begin, you know?
Something cool I found out about the Lincoln Town Car is that if you actually unplug the amplifier, the factory amplifier, you can no longer close the trunk. It just will not close.
That's a feature.
And then when you plug it back in, the car alarm will go off.
Lol.
Well,
we are getting a little off topic.
Nero's car of electrical problems.
It has no electrical problems. They're features.
Problem Miata or Vic or Town Car.
Only your car is broken.
The Hummer's got a frunk.
Literally,
I mean, it has a space, but no GM. I think they actually do make decent electric vehicles. I mean, just look at the Bolt, or is it the Volt? I don't know. I think it's Volt. Bolt. One of those two.
They have two.
The Chevy Bolt.
The Bolt is a hatch, and the Volt is a sedan. I think the Volt is now discontinued, though.
No, I think one of them is a hybrid, and one of them is like full electric or something. I don't know.
Something like that. The point is, they're both like Epic or something.
Yeah, I think it's the Bolt that has like a mostly electric, but also has a gas as a backup for like 40 miles or something.
That's not bad.
It's like a little tiny gas backup engine, but it mostly goes off the electric, as far as I know. And that actually has a pretty, like, really good range, at least 150, and it costs, like, what, 10, 20 grand less than, like, a Tesla car? Yeah. So, with this, GM actually has a pretty good competition to, like, Tesla's, what, Cybertruck. That weird-looking, door wedge on wheels or something.
The Cybertruck is no competition against the new Hummer EV, in my opinion. Firstly, the Hummer EV actually looks like a car, like it looks like a truck, like an off-road truck. Secondly, it doesn't look like a sack of fucking shit piece of metal junk pile.
That is completely subjective.
I don't like the Cybertruck. It looks ugly as fuck. The Hummer EV actually looks good. It's a throwback to the Hummer design. It looks like a truck. It looks like it can really off-road. It's got a lot of good design to it from everything I'm seeing here. I'm sitting behind this guy.
Okay, let me read out some facts from the Hummer page. I'm actually on the Hummer's page now. So there's going to be 4 different trim levels, and like the higher ones are going to be released first, and then the lower ones will be released year by year. Mm-hmm. But the first edition, get this. It starts at a hefty price. It's $112,000 starting, but it has 1,000 horsepower and 11,500 pound-feet of torque.
Ooh,
0 to 60 in approximately 3 seconds.
Oh God.
And get this. So not only is it, of course, you know, four-wheel drive, but it can, they have this feature called crab walk, which is, it has four-wheel steering.
Okay, I saw that.
And it can just move diagonally. It's got a completely removable glass roof, you know, that tints or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, see that in the photos.
It has underbody cameras and an inclinometer and all this stuff, so you can see what's going on under the vehicle. Oh. It has.
This is so good.
It has an actual. It can lift itself by 6 inches on command, so it can, you know, take on heftier terrain. And pretty crazy to see this from GM, especially with just like how ugly their recent trucks have looked. And this thing actually.
Oh, God. Like the recent trucks have looked like bro dozers with literally the front grill being the size of a wall, literally be a moving wall.
If you see the GM truck like design Instagram, it's almost comedic how like just absolutely hilarious some of their designs that they have sketched out. With.
Honestly, I don't think they could have done that to the Hummer EV because they needed a good exit and entry angle. Since it's supposed to have off-road pedigree, you know?
Yeah. Also, this Hummer EV is going to be an 8-lug.
Ooh.
Lots of lug, bro.
That's twice as many as a Miata.
I think you need it for all that torque, bro. Mm-hmm. Honestly, this thing is sick. I mean, this is right here. This is GM's comeback story on the Hummers, like, hands down. Like,
when you put the 405 with federal RSRRs on this thing, which don't exist yet, it's going to kick ass on the canyons. I'm just saying.
Yeah, dude, it doesn't have the corner good. Literally, it'll just exit the corner at the best it can and literally teleport in front of your opponent.
Here's the thing I want to see. It's actually see the performance on it in the Nürburgring.
The Burger King ring.
And I know, like, Tesla, like, their vehicles tend to, what, overheat after, like, one lap or something? After, like, doing, like, a very intensive drive. I'm just wondering if...
Literally, the Taken had the same problem, too.
Oh, the Taken did, too?
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the Taken can actually do multiple laps, though.
What? I could be wrong. I might be mistaken.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Taken actually did like multiple laps, multiple times. I think they actually did like a quarter mile test.
No! I remember now. I read about that on an article where the Taken was doing so good, and Tesla like sent out a heavily modified Tesla just to compete with the Taken and not overheat.
Yeah, that's the thing. And Tesla, I mean, they seem nice on the surface, but as far as performance, I don't think of them as any sort of performance cars whatsoever. And if when they do performance in what that stupid ludicrous mode, it's usually just very short, temporary, kind of bullshit kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just because you're going to eat through your battery like instantly.
Yeah, you eat through your battery, batteries overheat and crap like that.
But like, you know, at the end of the day, Teslas may not, at least until the Roadster comes out, Teslas may not be like hyper performance vehicles, but I'll have to give them credit. They are like some of the best EVs you can still get in America, even with their problems.
I like how it's an American company because it's good for our industry. But here's the thing, right? Believe it or not, guys, the Model S, last I saw, just a regular Model S, or perform, I don't know, like P85, whatever the fuck it is. Yeah. Got beat on Nürburgring by a fucking BRZ. I mean, this wasn't a recent thing, but goddamn, dude.
When did this happen?
It was like, when they first tested it, the BRZ was faster because of how badly the Tesla will overheat and go into limp mode. The BRZ gets beat by an HHRSS. Are you fucking kidding me, Tesla? I mean, Jesus. Speaking of Tesla being bad, like we said, the Model Y. Only thing I've heard is interesting about it. Most people don't even know it came out because it just looks like a Model X, but with a Model 3 front end. But someone took delivery of their Model Y, and this thing has a full, like, tempered glass roof. And somebody on it at the fucking factory forgot to glue their damn roof down, so it flew off on the freeway.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Kind of sad at the same time. Feel bad for that guy buying a brand new Tesla. See, that goes into like the weird quality concerns that like we've been having with Tesla, though. Like with the little wood pieces that they're using to hold down, like since what was it, a condenser or I don't remember. Like some dude ripped open his entire trunk and found under it like a piece of wood being between like a metal zip tie that's holding up some cooling equipment for the battery or whatever, and like that along with, you know, now a window flying off, like
what's wrong with wood?
Not a window, the fucking roof.
What's wrong? It's technically a win. It, by definition, it's a window.
Yeah, but more importantly, it's the damn roof.
It's a damn roof.
You can do with wood. You can make splitters. You can make.
Oh no, no, I'm not really faulting them for that. To be honest, I don't know. So I had a little debate with people about it, and I realized my that I'm wrong on it. When you pay for a premium product, you kind of expect not pieces of wood to be inside your car.
You
have more of an elegant solution.
Remember that most people who buy a Tesla are getting tax write-offs or tax subsidies.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, your taxpayer money going to putting that block of wood in your trunk.
Your biodegradable Tesla.
Yeah, biodegradable.
The only part of it's green, biodegradable.
Very green Tesla there.
So, well, though, I mean, it's Tesla. They're cool.
Yeah. Well, that's it for tonight. Had plenty to talk about next. Thank you for tuning into the California Tailgate Podcast. Make sure to subscribe, like, share, do whatever, and see you next time. Hopefully, we will be here next week. Catch you all later.